Hi guys, hope you're all keeping safe and well. Welcome to another episode of Brown Car Guy and Buddies. And today I'll be talking to Philippa, all the way over in Australia. Here in the UK we say she's down under. Yep, on the other side of the world. But of course, I got to know her in Dubai, where we actually did a lot of work together. In fact, at one point she was the main producer, director, videographer for Motoring Middle East. And we produced a ton of fun, very exciting content together. And I'm sure we're going to get into that. She is, of course, herself a media professional of over 2 decades in radio, print journalism, and of course video, and lots of other stuff that she does with racing teams and all kinds of stuff. And at the moment she's doing mentoring coaching, so we're going to get into that as well. Before we do that, make sure that you are subscribing to this channel, hit the bell notification icon so that you get updates every time I upload a video. Follow me on social media, just search for hashtag Brown Car Guy. That's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And of course, whilst you're at it, subscribe to browncarguy.com. there it is. So let's get into this. This should be great. Philippa, how are you doing? Long time no see. It's wonderful to see you all the way on the other side of the world from where I am.
Yeah, it is. It's so great to see you. It feels like it's been years since I've seen you, Shazad.
I know. How you been? So you were in Australia when the whole lockdown happened, or were you still in Dubai?
No, I was in Dubai January, February, March for Formula 4 UAE, and I just got home to Oz early March before all of the lockdowns happened here and people had to go into quarantine if they'd come from overseas. So I was so lucky. And my flight didn't have any cases of COVID either. So I was just thanking my lucky stars that I got home safe. So I've been in Oz for the last 3 months, which is weird because I really am always traveling and now we're just stuck in the same place.
Yeah. But you managed to complete one event though, just before you left. You were just telling me how touch and go that was.
Yeah, just. So our final round for Formula 4 UAE was the 6th, 7th of March. And we actually got shut down on the Thursday because the Dubai Sports Council said no more events, nothing public. But we got dispensation, all the categories racing that weekend, and with the help of the Autodrome that we were racing at, we got to operate behind closed doors. So at least all the kids that had come from Europe to compete in F4 could actually have their championship finale and we could crown a proper champion rather than having to go back to the previous round. So yeah, it was touch and go. We were all quite nervous. We could see the snowball happening and we just made it in time, thank goodness.
Well, that's incredible because, I mean, so many events, so many sporting events have had to be cancelled and championships haven't been concluded and all kinds of stuff, you know, haven't happened and won't happen now anyway. But let's put all of that aside. You are a lady of an incredible number of different talents. I mean, it's quite extraordinary what you've achieved and what you've accomplished, you know, already in your life. It's amazing, you know, because again, I mean, looking back through your stuff, you started off on radio. You were a journalist, you cover motorsports. I got to know you from your later work as a videographer, director, producer. I mean, what an incredible journey. I mean, you have constantly evolved yourself. I mean, how did you even get into the whole media game?
It was by chance, actually. A family friend of ours was a radio announcer north of Sydney, and it was actually Easter Sunday, 1998. I got to go and visit. I'll never forget it because it was only just 22 years ago that it happened, so the anniversary was only a couple of months ago. But I literally walked into this radio station, and I saw him sitting in this big comfy chair playing music and talking, and I thought, wow, this is really cool. And I was overstudying, like I studied really hard throughout school and I just wanted a break. I wanted the easy way out. So I saw radio as just a really cool option. Didn't know how to get into it. But a couple of months later, I heard an advertisement on the local radio station here. If you're interested, you want to work in a radio station, give us a call. So I did. Thinking back then in 98, technology was way different to what we have now. So I volunteered on a community switchboard. So rather than look up the internet, you called us to find out what was going on around town. We had reel-to-reel machines in our studio. Nothing was digital. There was no MP3. There was no FTP servers. Nothing. It was ancient. Oh my so that's God. How I got into radio. And then it was my product knowledge that got me into motorsport and being around the right people and having friends in the sport. And, yeah, then getting a chance to start
writing. So you've jumped ahead there. So you were you were at radio, and you managed to figure that out. And of course, it's great because, you know, when you go back to eras where, you know, it's like in print, you know, like I started out in print when they were still doing paste up on boards, you know, and you know, I remember having to get bromides done and all of this sort of stuff. But, you know, from that point of view, it gives you a great grounding in whatever discipline that you start off in, right? So when you start off in radio and you find out how it's actually done the old way, you know, things get easier, but then it gives you a great grounding. I mean, do you think you learned a lot? Do you think that enthused you in terms of, you know, carving out a career in media from then forward?
Yeah, it's really weird because I never even thought I could have a career in media. It was never on my radar. Like, I started university doing a Bachelor of Commerce degree. Like, what was I thinking? Huh. It was just by chance and the people that I met and then doors opened.
Listen,
and
you know, as an uncle would say, at least you have your degree. Yeah, it's very good. Huh? You have an
No, I didn't finish.
Yeah, you never know with it, you know.
No, I didn't finish uni. I literally did the 12 months to get my first year and then I walked away. Radio was too cool. I was doing too many crazy things and meeting rock bands and interviewing live and Chili Peppers and Matchbox 20. I thought, what do I want to go back to uni for? So
the stuff you did on radio initially was quite generic stuff. So you were covering entertainment and all right, cool.
Yeah, I was
That must have been really cool.
Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera, you know, like it was old school.
This is great. I love it when people name drop on these episodes. This is fantastic. Keep going.
No. I didn't. I never met them. Like, I did get to meet some cool people in my career, and I'm really thankful of having to, you know, interview really cool celebrities and have friends now that have been in rock bands before and all the rest of that stuff. But I actually progressed to breakfast radio a number of years later, and I noticed that there was a pattern because I was such a rev head growing up. I'd always watch the touring cars on a Monday.
This is interesting. So where did that come from? Where did that passion for all things automotive and motorsports come from?
Well, as you know, from us Aussies, we're very rivalrous. Like, we're either a Holden family or a Ford family. So I was GM, I was Holden. I even have my grandfather's 72 HQ1 Tunner in the garage downstairs. So Imtiaz always talks about that car whenever I see him. And actually Damo, our good mate Damien Reed, has even seen the car here in Sydney. So yeah, it's getting around. So we were a Holden family. I watched touring cars growing up. My dad used to do club racing meetings in the 70s before I was born. My favorite show was Knight Rider. So everything had this car theme and we were on properties, so we had motorbikes.
Come on, you got to show me the Knight Rider now. I know you put up a post earlier. I want to see it. Oh, wow.
How cool is this?
That is awesome. I'm so jealous right now. That is brilliant. And it's got the correct dashboard and everything. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Does it do the whole hello, Michael, or anything like that?
It does. No, it does.
I'm the voice of my Industry 2000's microprocessor, KITT for easy reference.
Oh my God, that is totally. Okay. So how long have you had that?
Actually, it was only given to me a couple of years ago by my sister. It was a birthday present. So she, I don't know where she found it, but I was like so grateful.
This is a whole new definition. People say the boys' toys. It's like, no, girls can have these toys as well. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, like, you know, we grew up on properties. So we were always racing motorbikes around the place, driving dad's tractors and lawnmowers. So we always had mechanical things around. So I was a rev head before I even realized that I was. And like, if you look back, all of those signs really point to where I've taken my career, but I didn't really think about it when I first started out. So I literally have just allowed the universe to take me where I've meant to be.
But it's a happy coincidence, isn't it, that on radio you found those things converging, because you obviously took to radio and you took to media and you enjoyed that. And then, of course, there's the rev head part of you, the petrol head part, and somehow that all converged for you.
Yeah, it did. It came out in my personality because we're always talking about it. And then, like, the listeners would call up. So on a Monday morning after a supercars race meeting, they'd either say, how cool was it that Holden won, or good on you, Phil, Ford won, you know, like sucked in. So, I mean, that was just the way it was. You know, we always have a great banter about it. And we were only, like, at that radio station, we're only about 20 kilometres from Oran Park Raceway. So because you were always near racing circuits and hanging out with racing drivers and mechanics and the local industry, I just seemed to have navigated my way in. So then, you know, meeting the right people, got to work for magazines, and then being a journalist and being a sub-editor and working on a number of publications got me in pit lane, meeting the right people, and then
So which magazines, which titles did you work for? Just give us a name check on what you worked
for. Yeah, so in Australia, Auto Action Magazine was the number one weekly mag. So I was a writer for that. So I would do news and features, and then I worked my way to dep editor before I left. I was a sub-editor on Wheels, Motor, Street Machine, all the special vehicles department. So yeah, I was always in at Bauer.
That's amazing. I mean, did you have any formal training in journalism? Were you at all, or you just really, wow.
No, and you know what's really weird is I hated English at school. I was a math, science and languages person. So how I ended up specializing in English, I have no idea. I was taught well, but yeah, it's just, isn't it funny how life just takes you in a different direction than what you expected?
And so how long did you do the whole publication thing? How long were you at magazines and doing journalism and editing all of that sort of stuff?
Well, actually, my first ever article I wrote from doing interviews at the Indy 500 in 2006. That was where I started actually writing, and then I wrote...
So you went to the Indy 500? Wow. To the Brickyard, the fabled Brickyard.
The Brickyard. Wow. Yeah, so I did 2006 on my own because it was just when I was getting into mags and I wanted to expand my horizons and see how the rest of the world did it, just to get away from this bubble that we seem to be in Australia. And then the way my career has eventuated, and I've gone all the way through supercars and other championships overseas, in 2016, I went back to the Indy 500 as videographer for Pirtek Team Murray. So we were one of the qualifiers and racing teams at that 100th running of the Indy 500 in 2016. So it was like we're all standing there in pit lane. I'm going, wow, how weird is it that 10 years prior, my first event was the Indy 500, and here I am now being part of the biggest one-day spectacle in racing.
So again, looking at, you know, motorsports events, I mean, so you witnessed motorsports events in Australia, obviously in the UAE and in the Indy. How would you characterize these events as in different places? What's the sort of feeling that and the ambience that you get from them?
Oh, they're all unique. I mean, look, Australians are very down to earth. We're very passionate about our brands. You know, I mean, Oz has sort of moved away a little bit from the Holden versus Ford rivalry because we've had Mercedes, yeah, or AMG, Nissan, everybody else coming in. So we've sort of diluted that a bit, but still going to the track, it's very relaxed. It's very, you know, take your family along. The Indy 500 is like another level. Like there's 300,000 people in the one place at the one time on the same day, and there's like, I'm getting heart palpitations thinking about the flyover and the national anthem. Like it's intense. It's really, yeah, is intense, but it's inspiring, you know, like, yeah, it's just a passion that they have that's beyond anywhere else.
They put on a real show, don't they? It's a show. It's an extravaganza, isn't it?
Yeah, it completely changes your life when you get out and you see how they do the industry overseas. And it just makes you a better, well-rounded professional when you're working in the field.
So how did you end up in Dubai then?
Well, see, I first went to Dubai in 2010 when the Supercars Championship raced at Yas Marina. So we did a double header, Yas and Bahrain International Circuit. Mm-hmm. And then we came back the following 2 years. And then in 2014, because I had friends there, so 2014 I came through when I was coming back from Europe, met some more people there, and opportunities started opening up. And at the end of 2014, I thought, oh, well, I'll come over for a couple of months and see if I can make a go of it. Because I'd always had this affinity with the place. I loved it. I always loved Dubai. And I can still remember my first impressions of seeing the Burj Khalifa and the Burj Al Arab. It was this amazing site, this fixture that it seems so far away from Australia, like considering, yeah, where we are on the other side of the planet. I never thought I would ever get there. But yeah, the opportunities opened up, and it's funny because it was a chance email that I sent to Damien about work and production agencies that got me in touch with Case Productions, which got me in touch with you.
So hang on, so before that, so you said you had an affinity with Dubai. So what aspects of Dubai really kind of appeal to you? What do you relate to when it comes to the UAE? I mean, as a girl from Australia, how does that work? How does that happen?
Well, it's weird because I'm half Australian, half Italian. So I'm quite country, but then I've got this European background, and then the desert and just what had been built there. Everything just looks so glitzy and majestic. It was something that was completely different to anything that we have here. I mean, we have a beautiful harbour in Sydney, but I mean, the Burj Al Arab was like a 7-star hotel, and it was just so much was spoken about this foreign place in the Middle East. And you get there and you're like, wow, this is really cool, particularly when you see the Burj Khalifa for the first time. So I don't know. I always liked it. Yeah. Everyone was friendly. I always wondered what it would be like to live and work there. Never really put two and two together and still until doors started opening up. And yeah, I had a great 5 years. I got so many really cool memories of lots of different shoots and camels chasing us and all the rest of
it. We'll come to that. But let's blow up some stereotypes and myths and stuff like that. Because again, like as a girl coming to the Middle East, and people have lots of perceptions of the Middle East, and you operated in Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Bahrain. I mean,
Qatar.
I mean, how did you find that in terms of like coming to the Middle East and, you know, how the Middle East embraced you and how you embraced it?
It was fine. Do you know, I actually feel more safe in the Middle East than I do here in Australia. Everyone's just very respectful. You don't have to worry about where you're walking or where you're traveling or, you know, as a woman, I always felt like, like I didn't have to worry about much. I didn't have to drive with my doors locked. I didn't have to worry about locking the front door of my apartment. Mm-hmm. Everyone's just respectful. Mm-hmm. And there's this tolerance that I just don't see anywhere else. And when I come back to Australia, I mean, like, I love being Aussie and I love my roots, but sometimes you really feel like saying to people, can you just wake up and just be kind? Just be nice. Just be kind. And that's something that the Middle East has going for it.
I think this is particularly pertinent in terms of, you know, what's currently going on and what's been happening. I know there's been a lot of protests from the indigenous population in Australia as well. I think that's a big thing there as well, isn't it? I mean, how have you found that? Again, you know, being able to travel and being able to live in other parts of the world gives you a unique perspective, don't you think?
Absolutely. It's so valuable. Like it's sometimes it's even more important. Education is going to see how other people live and the struggles that they have. You know, I've been fortunate, yes, to work in the US and I've seen what their military is like and what their police is like. And I worked with a lot of great veterans when I did the Indy 500 campaign. So it was interesting to get their perspective. I've also worked in South Africa. I did 3 years in SA. When I was living in UAE, I would travel there every month. And I know what that's like, driving around with my doors locked and having to have personal protection and making sure I traveled only during the day. And, you know, for people that live there day in and day out, that's their normal way of life. For me coming in, it was a little bit foreign for me, particularly when we're coming from Dubai and everything's open and
not locked. I remember having a photographer over when I was still doing Car Magazine. And after a shoot, we stopped off. I think it was at Mall of the Emirates we said, let's get some lunch. And he was like, oh, let me get all my gear. I'm like, why? He's like, I don't want to leave it in the car. I'm like, mate, you could leave it on the roof of the car and it would still be there when we got back.
Yeah, but that's a reality. Like, I had to do the same thing when I was coming from the racetrack. I had to take all my camera bags and my laptop bag into the restaurant to go to dinner with my colleagues. So it's not until you travel and you get to meet people around the world and you see what they have to face that you have a bigger appreciation for different lifestyles, different cultures. And the UAE is an amazing melting pot of different cultures and backgrounds and beliefs. You just become tolerant and accepting of everybody. And I just really wish people would go to the Middle East and see that side to experience it for a little while, because it would just open up the way that they communicate and interact with their own, you know, like-minded people back in their own home country.
Well said. And the other thing is, of course, that in the Middle East, you then found yourself working, you know, with a Turkish-British organization producing films alongside, you know, a British Asian and a Sri Lankan UAE guy.
We had
an incredible time. But how, just quickly, like, how did, I mean, you, so you radio presenter, journalist, how did you then transition to video? How did that happen?
Okay, so I was a producer for the Supercars Championship here in Australia, and I did that for just over 3 years. But I always had the mindset that in the future, how can I be a great director or a great senior producer if I didn't know what it took to do everything that my crew could do? So I thought it was really important for me to learn how to film, learn how to edit, learn how to color grade, learn how to white balance, do all that sort of stuff. Because then if I knew how to do it, then I could set realistic expectations on my crew, which has paid off immensely with all the work I've done globally, because now I don't set unrealistic expectation on a camera operator or setting up interviews or getting a production done. So when I left Supercars, I left the category, but I moved into pit lane. So I was the first dedicated social media manager of a racing team in the category's history. And that's all I would do was create video content and edit and do content planning. And that was really unheard of, because beforehand you always had communications managers, PR managers that do a little bit of social.
Yeah.
But when I did it for the Holden racing team, that's all I did. So I didn't do the press stuff. I just did all the digital content and the engagement with the fans. And so, yeah, I made mistakes. I looked at that customer my videos now and I think, what was I thinking putting that together? But you got to learn somewhere. And yeah, I really loved it. So after I did that for a year, I thought, well, I'll start my own production company and take all of the skill that I'd learned and the professionalism I learned at a broadcast level and help other categories or other clients be able to lift their game social media wise as well. And that's how I got into filming and editing, and been doing it ever since.
So how did you meet, how did you get involved with Case? Because we actually met on with Case, didn't we? Because we were doing that.
Yeah.
We had an idea, Imtishan and I, at Motoring Middle East, of doing an on-road, off-road challenge to see, you know, who would be fastest. And
we, Toyota and
we,
one.
We pitched it to Toyota, and they were well eager to do it because they had two great products that they wanted to showcase, the FJ Cruiser TRD and the 86 TRD. So it wasn't, it was probably, I think, till today, remains probably our most epic shoot, because it was a Top Gear style production. We had a crew of, I think, nearly 15 people working on it. We shot it over 3 days, dawn to dusk. We had backup. Mm-hmm. We had backup duplicate cars in case we wrote off the cars, you know, just in case. I mean, it was a full-on production, and you were part of that team. How did that all come about for you?
Yeah, so when I first met Noel and Selim at Case Productions, I actually went and did the Aquabike Championship in Qatar with them. So I did a week in Qatar, and then I went to Istanbul to do the TV edit with them. And I got to know the guys, and I had lots of fun. So whenever anything popped up in the Middle East, Selim would call me and say, look, can you come and be a second camera operator or editor on this particular production? And that was when I met you guys. So that was really the beginning of my relationship with Case Productions. And we got to do all the Motoring Middle East stuff, and yeah continue on ever since. So it was lots of fun, and chased by camels, and actually Fraser, I saw the interview with Fraser that you did with him, and he actually got our four-wheel drive bogged as well.
We should just mention, so anybody listening or watching, I should just mention there are interviews with Fraser. We've mentioned Fraser so far. We've mentioned Damien. We have an interview with him. Noel Ebden is somebody that you mentioned. I haven't, I should do a chat with Noel as well, actually. And with Salim. I think that would be quite cool as well.
Absolutely.
But there's a lot, you'll find all of that stuff on my podcast channels and on the YouTube channels as well. But I mean, so from your point of view, doing that stuff in that 3 day shoot that we did, because that was too, again, for Motoring Middle East, that was the first big proper shoot that we'd done. I mean, how did you find that experience? Just, you know, with the on road and the off road and that whole 3 day shoot. I mean, that was hard work, man.
Yeah, it is. It's hectic. And I think people think that video production or TV is glamorous. It's not, because there's no bathrooms. You've got to eat horrible sandwiches. You are stinking hot at 40 degrees plus, so you're literally covering yourself with water all the time. I remember doing a hot weather testing shoot with you, and I think I went pale once, and you actually told me, like, sit down and get out of the sun.
Yeah.
Even when we did the Jeep series with James and Gaisar Falowski.
Yeah, James Pikeaway. I have done a video with James Pikeaway as well, radio presenter, and we did a series for Jeep, which was basically my Jeep story. And we had a Western expat, which was James, and we had a local, which was Gait al-Falasi. Gait was crazy because he had this mad supercharged Wrangler, didn't he? But he was a lot of fun.
It was. But see, that shoot, like, we all met at 5:30 in the morning. It was foggy. Then we went out to the dunes. We literally just said to him, just go and do what you do. And I was running everywhere and up and down dunes, and I had sand in places I didn't even realize I could have sand. And then so by 9:30, it was already 40 degrees.
Yeah.
So then we had to go find somewhere to film his hero shots and his interviews. So we picked a really nice area with lots of trees, which was, in hindsight, it was a beautiful contrast from the greenery of the trees to the yellow and the sand of the shoot. But by the time we finished at 10:30, it was 45.
Yeah.
I had to keep going back into our other car in the AC every 15 minutes to cool down.
Yeah.
So it's not glamorous. It's a lot of hard work.
No, so I think you're right. I think a lot of people don't realize, especially with the Middle East, it's like, because I remember way back, again, getting photographers, when I first started on Car Magazine in Dubai, I used to fly photographers from the UK, because now there's lots of talent in Dubai. But back then in 2006, 2007, there weren't that many of the car level of photography that I needed. So I used to get photographers from the UK. And I remember one guy I had over, and we were shooting two Rolls Royces, and it was clear to me he was about to faint, because he was shooting detailed shots of two Rolls Royces, and they were both running, and he was standing in the middle of them, and he you could see he was about to go, and I was like, mate, just go and sit in one of these Rolls Royces and just take your time and relax. And afterwards he was like, I'm so glad you told me to do that, because people don't realize how quickly you can dehydrate and how dangerous it can be. I mean, you've been involved in rally motorsports and rallying stuff as well in the Middle East, and you know how deadly it can be.
100%. But then you don't know whether you have a cold drink of water or a hot cup of chai tea. You know, like there's different skills and different techniques to keep yourself cool. So it's not comfortable, and you really have to focus. Like there's lots of times we've been out in the sun, I really felt like I had, you know, sunstroke, but you have to just take your time. And the elements, like sometimes we would be on shoots, particularly for the Camaro series, and not only was it hot and sunny, it was windy, and then you get sandblasted, and then your equipment gets dirty, and then you can't keep filming. So it's not like being on a closed shoot. It's completely different to anything I had ever done before in all of my media and motorsport career beforehand. It was a big test.
Well, we had a lot of fun, and we obviously after that initial, when we met you on the case thing, and we kind of teamed up to do other stuff as well. And we covered motor show stuff. You've mentioned a few of things. We did the Camaro, we did the Honda Jazz, and I'll put links to these videos. If you're watching this on YouTube, I'll put the links below. And we did the Cadillac thing. I really enjoyed the Cadillac thing. And that was a spur of the moment. Because initially the Cadillac brief that we'd had, and this was obviously a paid video that we were doing for General Motors for Cadillac, and they just wanted to highlight model year changes. So we'd done a script and we'd highlighted all the changes and we sent them and they'd approved it, they approved the budget. And then me and Imtiazan sat down and we said, this is boring. And then we chatted to you about it. And then we came up with a completely different idea, literally like overnight, you know. And the wonderful thing was, like, you were straight away, you were up for it. You were like, I know exactly what you guys have got in mind. And, you know, a lot of the times, it's so hard when you're working with people to try to, you know, have something in your mind, but then to get that other person to understand it. But what I really like was that you grasped it straight away. You figured it out.
Yeah, it was a really cool concept, like that whole shady start, underground, suitcase and mystery and gangster style. And, you know, I mean, look, anything can happen in Dubai, you know, like your imagination can run wild. We've got great backdrops, a great underground car parks we could film in. We had, you know, different lighting effects. Like there was so much that we did in that shoot. Yeah. And like, I've got to say, the ideas that you and Imtiazan always came up with were just amazing. Like, when I would get a script, I was blown away, and I could easily do my shot list. I could easily picture it. And it was really important working with you guys, that not only could I picture it, but I was also editing as I was filming at the same time to make sure that we could get the right links and get all the extra overlay. And but yeah, when you got a really cool concept and you run with it, shoot as much as you can out of it and make it a really cool story. It's all about telling stories.
It's all about telling stories. Yeah, it's all about telling stories and creating really cool content. But I gotta say, I mean, you know, having said all of that, you are a hard taskmaster at times.
I'm a perfectionist, you know that? God, I don't know how many times I've asked you guys to stand in the one spot and then Imtiazan's moving around or you're fidgeting. I'm like, oh no, I've got to set up again.
I've got to say, I think poor Imtiazan usually got the worst of it.
He's always such a great sport. But as much as we did work really hard to create the videos that we made, I think we all just worked together. We were a really cool threesome getting all this stuff done, and as we knew that the end product was going to be worth it, I may have got irritated or had to do things a couple of times, you know, but that's us all making you guys look good. At the end of the day, it's about making you look good.
What are the key standout moments, obviously apart from when we were trying to get Imtiazan in his 70s get up to do the whole disco pose? I mean, that probably took 50% of that shoot, I reckon, to get him to do that.
And the whole chilling like villains. Yeah.
It took a while, didn't it? I mean, that was an epic. So this was a series that we did on the Camaro. We were covering 50 years of Camaro, and we were shooting each episode in the style of the decade. So it was 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then the 2000s, you know. But what were the projects that we worked on together? What were the key ones for you? What were the ones that really stand out?
I love the Camaro. That was a beautiful car. And I really enjoyed how we put that project together because, yes, we did do it in the style of each of the eras. Most people would see that it was because you guys had the get-up and the outfits to match and the car to match. But what people I don't think realize is that we did a lot of research looking at the old TVC and commercials, the television style, the editing style. And considering that the camera equipment and the editing equipment from the 60s is drastically different to the technology in the 2000s, I then had to adapt.
Yeah.
So the 60s and 70s were like long shots. It was static shots. It was a little bit of panning, not a lot of movement. And then by the time we got to the 90s and 2000s, there was slider shots and glide cam stuff and tracking shots and osmos and everything to keep it fluid. So there was a lot of research that we did to be as authentic as we possibly could. So people, I don't think, realized when they watched it how much effort was put into that project. So that was the number one for me.
Yeah, it was incredible because also people don't realize, people think like over here, you can just go down to Oxfam or whatever and buy old clothes, but we had to actually get them tailored and then trying to explain to the tailor why we were getting out of date fashions made up, which he just couldn't comprehend. But every one of those outfits was researched. They were based on actual photos of actual outfits that we found.
Yeah.
And also the other thing.
And the music as well that we
Yeah, the music,
pick.
That's right,
the
music,
the color grading, making sure that the editing effects, the overlays match the television quality of the era. It was huge.
It was epic. And I think it amuses me that even now, and even the people at GM, when we say to them, which episode was it where the car didn't actually move? Even they can't remember it. So it's down to your brilliant editing. But one of the cars actually did break down on us. And a lot of people don't realize which one it was. And I won't tell you now. I'll let you comment. I'll let you go and watch it and comment below which one it was. So let's come right up to date. So what are you doing now? How can people find you? I know you're doing a series of great stuff. You're doing a mentoring program in media. And this is amazing stuff. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so like there's been so much part of my media career where just by me being an interviewer or a producer, I've had to coach people on how to do interviews, how to present themselves, how to leverage the media successfully for their career. And particularly with Formula 4 UAE, like I'm working with 15, 16 year olds that are just starting their career. And so much they're like, Philippa, please help me. Yeah. So I decided to put all of my experience and create Media Master Coach. So it's an online academy. It's not, you don't buy a program and do it by yourself. Like you're always mentored by me or one of my coaches that I'm going to have in the future. And so we teach athletes, we teach content creators and even organizations if they want to do media training for their digital media teams on how to leverage the media successfully, how to get the basics right, look after crisis management, interview skills for people that are athletes or, you know, running their business and will have, you know, press coverage. Looking at how to do social media right. Just because someone's got a Facebook page or an Instagram account doesn't mean they know how to do it for their sporting profile or for their business. So yeah, so I've taken all of the last 22 years experience and created it down to a couple of programs and I'm now able to pass on all my experience and knowledge to other people so they can up their game as well.
That's brilliant. That sounds invaluable. Can you just tell people how they can, I'll put the links below as well, but tell people how they can find you.
Yeah, so it's just Media Master Coach on Facebook and Instagram and the website's mediamastercoach.com.
Philippa, it's been fantastic to catch up with you. It's brought back a lot of fantastic memories. It was always wonderful to do projects with you. And I said earlier you were a hard taskmaster, but I actually really appreciate you for that because just by doing that, it forced us to up our game. It forced us to make a better product and it forced us to learn. And it's all about learning and developing. And that's what you are still continuing to do. Fantastic stuff. Wonderful to talk to you. Thanks so much for taking the time and wish you all the best with this.
Yeah, you too, Shazad. Thanks for all the great memories. We had so many great times in Dubai.
And never say never. You never know. Hopefully, work again in the future.
Hopefully. We've got to have a reunion sometime when the borders open. We can travel again.
Definitely. All right. Take care, Philippa.
See you. Bye.
Wow, that was so much fun catching up with her and reminiscing and reminding ourselves of all the crazy stuff we did in terms of video content that we produced at Motoring Middle East. And yeah, it would be awesome to work with her again. She was always, like I said, she was a hard taskmaster, but she always trying to get us to do the best that we could do to create the best content that we could create. I hope you enjoyed that chat. Let me know what you thought of it in the comments above, below, elsewhere. Like I said, please make sure that you subscribe to this channel so you don't miss any of these chats or any other videos I upload. Hit that bell notification icon so that you get updates as soon as I upload a video. And also, of course, follow me on social media. Just search for hashtag Brown Car Guy. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And whilst you're at it, subscribe to browncarguy.com. And if you're enjoying these videos, then please consider supporting me on patreon.com/ShazadShake. And there you'll also find a unique exclusive piece of content for me to you that I've created. It's kind of like a parody sequel to the original Cannonball Run movie. I think it's a lot of fun. You let me know what you think of it. In any case, if you can't do that, please continue to like, share, comment, subscribe, all the rest of it. That's much appreciated. And I'll catch you again soon in the next video.